Welcome to the University of Manitoba Icelandic Radio Journal, a series of short documentaries highlighting Icelandic culture in Winnipeg. This edition features part one of a talk by Halldór Guðmundsson entitled Halldór Laxness, A Traveler in the Age of Extremes, which was presented at the University of Manitoba in March 2009.
Well, welcome to the Páll Guðmundsson Memorial Lecture Series. It is an honor to introduce tonight's guest speaker, the writer Halldór Guðmundsson. He studied literature at the University of Iceland and then at the University of Copenhagen. The author of several books, he has written extensively on Iceland's literature and history. He has also taught Icelandic and comparative literature at the University of Iceland and lectured widely on Icelandic literature and history. He also worked as a publisher for almost 20 years, and he is the author of numerous cultural programs for both radio and television. For the last few years, he has been serving as the editor of Skirnir, the journal of the Icelandic Literary Society, one of the oldest periodicals in Europe, the journal appearing first in 1827. He is also supervising the Iceland's Guest of Honor position at the Frankfurt Book Fair to be held in 2011. In 2004, his book, The Islander, a biography of Halldór Laxness, won the literary prize, the Icelandic Literary Prize, for best work of nonfiction. And it has been translated into 5 languages and now also available in English, translated by Philip Rotorn. Receiving gleaming reviews on both sides of the Atlantic Ocean, Guðmundsson's book demonstrates a profound knowledge of the life and work of Halldór Laxness, the writer who received the Nobel Prize for Literature in 1955. But there have been times when people could only hope, and that for various reasons, that Laxness did not represent Icelanders on the world stage. But in times like ours, and after a somewhat gloomy winter, there are those who sincerely hope that the world keeps Laxness in mind, not only for the sake of Icelanders and Icelandic culture, but possibly for the world's cultures at large. For if and when we like to understand or try to understand the forces at work shaping our lives and even fortunes, there's no power like literature in revealing what can be revealed at any given time. All the more reason to praise a writer like Laxness, who had the courage to explore and dive deep into some of the more paradoxical characteristics of the human species. One of them being the mixed blessings of the heroic coat. Please welcome Halldór Guðmundsson, who will now present his lecture titled Halldór Laxness, A Traveler in the Age of Extremes.
Thank you very much, Birna, and good evening, ladies and gentlemen, kæru vinir. First, I would like to express my heartfelt thanks to the University of Manitoba and to Birna and the Department of Icelandic for inviting me here to tell you something about this most important author since Snorri Sturluson in Iceland. And I would also like to mention that this week here has been incredible, the hospitality and warm welcome I found both in here and in Gimli, Árborg, Hekla and Riverton. So this has been simply wonderful for me. But I would like to tell you something about Halldór Laxness. I will show you some photos. Let us start by this wonderful official photograph of Laxness, taken when he was 53, that is exactly my age, and received the Nobel Prize. It's slightly before that. This is the official Icelandic author, Halldór Laxness, an author of 60 books, both novels, poems, short stories, plays, and numerous volumes of essays. He has been translated into 46 languages, and it is very interesting to see that in the last 10 years, he has been republished in many countries, and for example, about 7 or 8 of his novels have been republished by Random House in New York, where he was not published at all, that is, in the US in the 1950s, while he got the prize. I will ask you to think about, while I speak about him and tell you about his life and works, about four themes, or four ideas, about the idea of being an Icelander and a cosmopolitan, an islander and a citizen of the world, and about the search for absolute truth and absolute beauty. These are the most important strings in his harp. And you can imagine what kind of place he was from when he was born in Reykjavik in 1902. There were about 6,000 people living there. Iceland was still a Danish colony. I think there were two policemen, two a bit elderly prostitutes. There was no real cultural heritage. He wasn't born into the large bourgeois culture of Western Europe. If we think about it, in 1876, for the first time, two people played instruments at the same time in Iceland, the same tune. That is, they formed a band. The Reykjavik Trumpet Orchestra in 1876, about the year that the first Icelanders came here, and about the year that Der Nibelungenring by Wagner was shown in its whole in Germany. So there was a huge difference. The first time an Icelandic painter gave a private exhibition was in the year 1900. First time he gave a private exhibition in Iceland. The only heritage we had, the only culture we had, was literature. Literature and storytelling. This just to explain why literature had this very important place in the minds of the Icelanders. But it would be totally optimistic to speak about a literary market or anything like that. I mean, that year, more books in Icelandic were published in Winnipeg than in Reykjavik. And most, in first place, was Copenhagen. The idea of becoming a great writer and becoming a professional writer from a country where there wasn't a book market to support any writer at all. When he was young, there was no professional writer in Iceland at all. Later, Laxness said that it was young writers at the time, they arrived at an unwritten world, which is very beautifully said. This is where he came from. This is Melkot, which was right in the center of Reykjavik. It's now, if you've been there close, it's disappeared, but it would have been close to the old churchyard. It's where his parents met, his mother coming from the country and his father also from a very poor family. They met there. This Melkot is actually also the model for the story the fish can sing. Some of you might know. And they met there, but Guðjón, Halldór's father, and he was named Halldór Guðjónsson, worked very hard, and he bought the land Laxness in 1905. And the whole family moved to Laxness. Guðjón was also a road builder, probably the most important thing you could do in Iceland at that time. There were no roads, and of course they only built them between the glacier rivers. There were very few bridges. It was a very hard country to live in. But he bought this farmland Laxness at that time. It's about 20 kilometers away from Reykjavik. At that time, there were only poor farmers near Laxness. It was the only house built of stone in the valley. And every Icelandic family at that time was poor, but in a sense you could say they were not as poor as the poorest, this family. So he had a good childhood, a protected childhood, which was quite good because he wasn't interested in farm work at all. Later he said that he had never done any decent work in all of his life. The only thing he was interested in was books, writing and drawing. And he also said that the whole parish around felt sorry for his parents to have a son who was assumed to be quite bright but made himself totally useless. The interest in writing and in telling stories started very, very early with Halldór. He may have been 7 or 8. Later on, he constructed the idea that he had a vision when he was 8 years old at a stone called Gljúvrasteinn, where now his house stands, and a vision that he must go and tell the world his stories. But I think every writer constructs such a story. But there might have been something about it, because he uses this idea of a young boy having a vision in many of his books. It's used in World Light and also in some lesser known works. At least we know that he had already written a novel, now lost, of 600 pages when he was 12. But the very, very first, and I must mention this here, the very first time that he wrote under his own name in a paper was in 1916. He was 14 years old, and it was for the paper Children's magazine published in Winnipeg called Solskin, Sunshine. That's the first article under Halldór's name that was published. He addressed the children of Sunshine, dear Sunshine children. He addressed them as if he was an old man, told them to read and gave them various ideas of as how to behave, and informed them that he had already read all the Icelandic sagas when he was 11. So we have this urge to tell stories, and an urge to seek beauty. And we have the tradition, but we have no real fruitful environment for it. But the tradition you can see here in his grandmother, Guðný Klængsdóttir, who lived with him on Laxness until very, very old age. And she represented in his mind the old Icelandic tradition. She knew verses and stories from the 18th and 17th century and taught him all kinds of things. And since then, every Icelandic author thinks he must have a very interesting grandmother in order to become an author. But Guðný was also belonging to the old time, because at Laxness they soon got a telephone, and she never for the rest of her life believed anything that was said in the telephone. So we see that he brings along, or has in his upbringing, he gets to know the old Icelandic tradition. But already 17 years old, he had published a novel called Child of Nature, a bit Hamsun-like, old-fashioned Scandinavian romantic about the rural life, but he had written it 16 years old. Half a year later, his father died, and half a year later, he went to Copenhagen. He wanted to go out into the world and tell the world his stories. Here's a photo taken 2 days after he comes to Copenhagen, so, and already this young man from the country in Iceland looks like a man of the world. You can see he writes proudly on the back. He's along there with the man he stayed with. He writes proudly on the back to his mother, "This is me in Copenhagen. I'm smoking my first cigar." And Oskar Scheuermann, the man standing with him, worked in a brewery and wasn't particularly interested in culture or literature or anything but of that kind, but somehow Halldór knew about some vague ties between the Scheuermann family and his own family and asked just to stay with them. And they let him in. They didn't have any room for him, so he had to live just in the middle of the flat, so to speak, but already a day after, he had designed a small and printed a small paper where it said "Halldór from Laxness, Poeta," so that everybody would know a poet had moved into the Scheuer family's house. But at that time, you also could see him write his first short stories, and he wrote a short story already that fall in the 1919, which he managed to sell to the largest Danish newspaper, Berlingske Tidende. And it came on the front page, a horrible story, but it showed his will and his ambition. This fall, he also starts to read and read in a more disciplined way. He read Olof Strindberg in a library in Sweden. And you could see that he had decided upon becoming a writer. But he also wanted to travel around the world, and because we are here, I took this picture along. This is Daniel Halldórsson, a close friend of the family who grew up with Laxness' father and moved to Winnipeg and promised Halldór to send him some money so that he would come at least to New York, if not up to Winnipeg. And Halldór wanted to make use of this. He traveled already widely in 1920, 1921. 1921, he came to Germany. He came to Austria. And I think that is where his thoughts on becoming a Catholic shaped. Because we must now see, we have a young man who's dreaming of becoming a writer and who wants to tell the world his stories. But he has also, coming from this very backward country that I described in the beginning, he has also the dream of learning to know the great European culture. He comes to Germany, comes to Berlin, Leipzig, Dresden, and so forth. And what he sees are the young men his age or slightly older, more or less crippled from the First World War. If you went along the Kurfürstendamm, you could see at that time beggars all over, young men who were crippled by the war. And I think that's where the idea shaped that there must be something more than this. European culture cannot only have been this. He wanted to seek something which was more truthful and better than this. He tried then with the money of Daniel Halldórsson to go to New York, but he had spent most of it before, so he came on a trip and was simply sent back. So he never came into the US, but I found one can still see on the internet that he came to Ellis Island and was turned back. So at that time, this was in the summer of 1922, he was quite helpless in Europe, and he went to Bornholm, a small island near Denmark, and spent the summer there. Again, he had found a family who had some vague ties to his own family in Iceland and managed to let him stay there. And he met an Icelandic girl who worked at the farm in Bornholm, who was 6 years older than he, and they had a short summer of love. And that's when that is her, Málfríður Jónsdóttir on the right side, Maria, Halldór's first child on the left side. Because when Halldór left Bornholm, Málfríður was pregnant and Maria was born in the spring of 1923. One could add that Maria is still alive. Not many people knew of her until I interviewed her for Icelandic television. That was in 1997, then Málfríður was also still alive. She lived until 2003 and died then, 106 years old, the oldest living Icelander at that time. Never married, and only once Maria tells me had this summer of love in Bornholm in 1922. But that was not what Halldór was thinking about, because he left for a monastery in Luxembourg. At the end of 1922, he came to Luxembourg to the monastery Clairvaux, at Clairvaux, which was the monastery where most Scandinavians went, because that was the monastery the Catholic Church had given the, or had the task of getting the Scandinavians back to Catholicism. So he came there, and I think again we have his search for an absolute truth. He didn't find it in the societies or in the countries where he went around, so he was looking for the absolute truth, and for a whole year he stayed in the monastery. He became a Catholic, as you can see here. This is from January 23. This expression is almost holy, as you can see. He wrote to all of his friends that now he had become a Catholic, and that was the only thing you ever could be, and you should, and he told them all that they should become Catholic, and they returned, "How can you tell us that and act like a holy man since you have just fathered a child in Reykjavik?" And he sent this beautiful little answer in a letter to one of his friends: "I, as a Catholic, cannot be held responsible for whatever I can have done as a Protestant." You should be slightly careful with writers. He was looking for the absolute truth, and I think also he was a strong believer at that time. But going to a monastery in 1923 also meant that he had access to a wonderful library, he could stay there, he had food, and he could write. And whatever Halldór did, whatever he adhered to, whichever truth he sought, writing always came first. He wrote thousands of pages at the monastery. But he also moved along in his religion and took the first stage of becoming a monk. But then he left it, as you can see from this picture, which was taken in 1925 in Sicily. He left the monastery in the end of 1923 because you could see that the idea of seeking beauty in writing had gotten the upper hand. He wanted to become a writer. He went home for a short while and then again abroad to Rome. He told everybody, his family and so forth, that he wanted to go to the Catholic school, the Propaganda Vitae in Rome, but he didn't stop there. He went further on to Sicily, and that was the heart of degeneration in Europe at that time. It was the Taormina in Sicily was the city where all gay men could seek refuge at the time, where there was a very interesting an exciting culture flourishing, and Halldór Laxness as a writer got new and new sights to his way of thinking. He was reading Manifesto Surrealism by Breton at that time. He was reading all kinds of new literature, and he was looking for the most modern literature that could be found in Europe. So we have him moving on and more writing back in his articles to his people that Iceland was far too backward the country, that you should become modern, that you should seek out these things that makes a modern society, and that the farmer's culture of Iceland was totally obsolete. He wrote articles that shocked quite a few Icelanders at that time, stating, for example, that finally Reykjavik was coming close to something like a city, not only with a university and cinema, but also with football and homosexuality. He was always provoking, but he was also writing on his first breakthrough novel, The Great Weaver from Kashmir, published then later on in 1927, which gives a very strong feeling of modernism and changed, along with another Icelandic work from that time, the shape of modern Icelandic literature, which had been rather backward, rather late naturalism, you could call it, and not incorporating the ideas of the new urban culture that Halldór was seeking. Now, if you wanted to be modern, you wanted to tell your stories to the world and let everybody hear, the best thing to do was to go to Hollywood. So this is where Halldór went in 1927. You can see here his totally new look compared to the monastery and to the Sicily look. This is more a Dashiell Hammett kind of looking at the world. And he came to Los Angeles in 1927 after first coming here to Winnipeg. He came here in June 27, and he wrote to his friends that he just wanted to make a short stay here and move on to Los Angeles and write 10 great films and earn millions of dollars. I know that I have it in me, he said. And I'm urging for fame and power. He also wrote to his friends at this time. He stayed here for a few months and was very well received. He gave readings in Aarborg and Gimli and Riverton. He even sang to people. He wrote a short story that takes place here, New Iceland, a story that he was told here and composed into a short story. And his later criticism of the so-called Western Icelanders was not due to his stay there in the summer of 27. That was a good stay for him. But he wanted to move further on, and he went to Los Angeles, and he wanted to write films, and he tried his hand on that. He made contact with some producers, one called Paul Byrne, another called Chris Sander. He tried to contact Viktor Sjöström, the famous Swedish filmmaker, and he wanted to place his first film manuscripts with the production companies. But that was a hard thing to do. I think one of them had a competition for manuscripts, and there came about 40,000. It was not easy for a totally unknown Icelander to come there, but he tried his best. He made contact to Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer Studios. He wrote his first draft of Salka Valka at that time. Remember, these were the silent movies, so a manuscript was about 15 pages. And Salka Valka in that manuscript is a rather wild thing, I must say, very sadomasochistic and Freudian and what do you know. But, and he says there is something that point to that he almost placed it with a film company, with Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer. He was already discussing with a director, and he was expressing his wish that Greta Garbo should play Salka, which would have been wonderful if he had that film. But he didn't manage, and he had to keep himself alive for 2 years in Hollywood by giving talks about Iceland to tea parties of rich ladies. And that was not what Halldór Laxness had dreamt of. But what was much more important then, or proved much more important, was that he got to know American writers. He became a friend of Upton Sinclair. The photo is inscribed to Laxness, if you can see it. He read Sinclair Lewis, Theodore Dreiser. He read the American social novel. And it changed his view of literature from the rather modernistic things he had doing before to thinking more about the social novel. He also became a socialist in the United States at that time. And that's when he fell out with the people here in Winnipeg, because he wrote lots of articles for Heimskringla, the paper here, and one of them published in the beginning of 29 was an article about Upton Sinclair praising him, and also, as usually, because he loved to provoke, he was giving his statements on the so-called 100% Americanism, and he said, which was a movement then, a patriotic movement in the U.S., he said 100% American is a total idiot. So some people here minded this. There were many articles and answers in Heimskringla back and forth. He answered everybody who ever criticized him. Finally, the editor wrote to him and said that people were giving up subscribing to Heimskringla because of all his provoking articles in the paper, and he had to stop it. But some here translated his articles, and he was filed charges against him with the police in Washington. And had to meet the police in Los Angeles. His passport was taken away from him, and so forth. So that was quite a difficult time for him, half a year. But then, through Upton Sinclair and the American Civil Liberties Union, he got his passport back. About the time when the crisis hit in October 29, even in tea parties for rich ladies, was no demand for an Icelandic author anymore, and he had to go home. And home in every sense. Home to this farm, which he visited for the first time, in the eastern part of the country in 1926. Sænautasel, it is called. There were still people living on the very, very poor farms up in the heath on the eastern part of the country. And this farm he used as a model for the farm later in Independent People.
The University of Manitoba Icelandic Radio Journal is a joint production between the Department of Icelandic Language and Literature at the University of Manitoba and also UMFM 101.5. More information can be found either at umfm.com or umanitoba.ca/Icelandic.